because I was broke. I don't have any money. I brought software engineers. I brought product designers. I brought a number of people, put them together and said that let us work. And for 6 months, the entire team ran on motivational speech from me every single day. There was no money. It worked because I was able to like sell a vision. Me and two ladies that I brought into my team. That was Plural Body in 2020. Then in 2021, we hired a few more hands. Today, we are almost 90 people. Over the last 3.5 years, we've trained more than 6,000 people. I think by the end of this year, we should be breaching 7,000. That the best way to go about talent development is not by packing a crowd of people and teaching them. That's one of the reasons why we had a lot of numbers in the early days. So it's not packing a crowd of people and then teaching them and then sending them out. It's not the width, it's the depth. If you only do the barest minimum, you churn out a bunch of people who are just going to be at the lowest level of the pyramid. So you have to get people to the highest point. You don't need 3 million software engineers to change the country. What you need is a good number of very high talented people who can access opportunities and who can then turn around and create opportunities for others as well. So what you want to do is to create a ripple effect. If you want to create a successful ecosystem, talents, startups, ecosystem builders, and investors, you have to connect all four of these elements. It can't just be one side. It can't just be talents, because then if you churn out all these talents and they have no place to work, then what's the point?
You know how we do it here. We break down businesses for you to understand what is happening. And then also we bring people who are game changers, trailblazers in their respective sectors to just come discuss what is really happening in their sector and the way forward. And the Frankly Business Podcast, you know, we don't do the, maybe the guests can do the suits and tie, but we don't do the suits and tie. Come on. Either you want to be a traditionalist or perhaps we can do the T-shirt or whatever. Just break down business for people to understand what is really happening. Have a basic conversation around the Nigerian business landscape, the African business landscape, and even the global business landscape. Because in one of our episodes, you're going to be seeing someone not from this continent very soon. Anyways, we'll keep that in the cooler. As a matter of fact, ladies and gentlemen, if you look at what has been happening in the tech ecosystem, a lot really happening in the tech ecosystem. Nigerians, that ecosystem is one of the front burners as regards innovation, as regards bringing in FX, apart second front burners as regards the non-oil sector. The oil sector is obviously the cash cow of the economy. But the next is the tech ecosystem, because we're seeing founders raising a truckload of money, bringing in FX into this country. And despite the harsh economic terrain, still trying to survive. And that's why we're like, okay, let us look for a way to just have this conversation about the tech ecosystem. How can you prepare for the future of work? In 2020, remember what happened, COVID-19 pandemic, and we saw a shift in the way people work. The business model had to change from work from home. A lot of people had to adopt new strategies. We saw new industries battered into the Nigerian economy. Content creation was not a thing per se pre-pandemic, but see what content creation is doing post-pandemic. As a matter of fact, I don't need to introduce him. You know my co-host. Come on, you're the producer and of the Frankly Business Podcast and the vice president of Godfather Production. Ladies and gentlemen, no other person but the fine boy. Make I put it on that way. Fine man. Fine man. But Kerechi, I was saying something there. If you look at what has been happening regarding content creation, there was a story that came out that one of the highest earning creator on YouTube in Nigeria is a pastor.
Yeah.
Actually,
when I saw
a person of Pastor Jerry Eze,
when I saw it,
7 billion naira. Kel.
When I saw it, I was like, oh.
Kel, I didn't say 1 billion.
I know it's 7.
7 billion naira.
I'm coming to that. I saw it. And
you see what content creation is doing?
I tell you, brother. I saw it. I was like, okay, how much to rent Otter?
No, it's not that. I get it. But an entire industry has been battered.
Yeah.
Fact. It's 7 billion. It's not that the pastor is hungry or... If you check the true content of if you investigate his intention, it's not really, he's into the prayer ministry. Nigerians are joining. I don't know if you get my point.
Yeah.
But what I'm saying in essence is 10 years ago, that industry was not there.
True.
Yeah.
It was never a thing.
It shows that the market is viable.
The market is viable.
Extremely viable.
Extremely viable. And so, there are truckload of industries that have not been bettered in this part of the world, in Africa. And how can we do this? By bringing people who are building infrastructure, building solutions for those industries, and are creating the framework that others can create a launch pad from or build on. Mm-hmm. And that's why we have no other person but the founder. If you're driving, park, whatever you're doing, if you're eating, you just might get choked. So you want to make sure, especially if you're eating the jollof rice with lots of pepper, you want to calm down, because this man, fine gentleman, handsome gentleman, apart from that, he's very cerebral. He's going to break down really what you need to understand about edutech, about the tech ecosystem in general, and about business. You're very much welcome, Onduka Okpabi, who's the founder of Plural Code. Thank you very much. Welcome to the Frankly Business.
Thank you so much. First of all, I'd like to say that nobody told me ahead of time that this was not a suit and tie podcast. So I would have actually been a little bit more different in how I dress when I turned up here today. So
our guest is free to put on anything.
Oh,
but
okay.
We just make sure we break it.
I don't know.
He didn't get the memo. MTN network has been bad.
So you're going to blame MTN for this one, right?
In my head, I was saying I want to look like a cartel boss.
I do enjoy being here, so thank you very much, Kel. Thank you, Frank, for also bringing me in here. So I'm just excited for the conversations we're going to be having today.
So you play in the edutech space. Looking at what you've done, you have thousands and thousands of students under your ecosystem. You've been able to I would love to put it this way. You're an accelerator. You grow people who are novice in a particular industry, and they pass through you to become expert.
Yeah.
And so you know what it takes for people to, once they pass through a particular system and they become a changed individual after they pass through your ecosystem.
Yeah.
There's a lot that has gone in to work to build an entire human.
Yes, actually.
To change his mindset.
Yeah.
To become much more productive in the economy.
Yeah.
And that is not in any way a joke. It has to be someone of substance and caliber to be able to do that. Whereby you just have an institution and people pass through you. Yeah. And by the time they come out, their revenues become 10x. Their mindset becomes 10x. Because for you to play in the competitive landscape, especially in an ecosystem like tech, it takes a lot of confidence for you to do that, and a lot of technical know-how. Take us through your journey.
Okay.
Before this entire light camera action, take us through your journey. Who is Onduka?
Okay. That's a very interesting question. Thank you. So the thing is that before you can go out and, try to maybe create an institution or try to create any kind of system that allows people to learn and become better or whatever it is that you want to call it, you have to make sure that you are already a microcosm of what you're trying to create. So like you have to be an example of it, right? So me growing up and, starting out as a software engineer, understanding the challenges that I faced, understanding how I wasted. I wouldn't call it a waste. Let me not call it a waste, because it devalues the experiences and everything. But the idea was that I started software engineering around 2012. But I had been, building, system softwares and websites using outdated frameworks, because when I started trying to learn myself. I was still in school then, trying to learn on my own and all that. And so I was working with outdated frameworks. I was building stuff actually that I tried to use on my own, and I had a couple of friends and, people that are using it. But I had no idea that, the world had moved on from this thing. I used to use Visual Basic. For anybody who is a programmer, if you ask them about Visual, they're just going to laugh, because it's like you are back in the 80s, right? I had no idea, because I was just in a small bubble of my own trying to do that. And so that bubble popped in 2015, I think, 2014, 2015, when I tried to, put together a small team to work on a project. I brought in a developer who was like, bro, what are you doing? What on earth are you doing? This is so old. you can't scale this. This is so bad. You know, you have to, you know, step away from this. At that point, imagine learning something and doing something for 2 years and then realizing you have to start from the beginning again. You have to just abandon everything you've been doing for 2 years. Go and learn something different. Go and focus on the more modern technologies. Go and focus on something. It was at that point that I realized that, okay, I think I need to go and try and learn in an institution. And then right at some point in 2015, I actually enrolled in a tech school. Back then, I grew up in Abia State. I grew up in Abia State, right? Mm-hmm. In Aba specifically. I re-enrolled.
That's the hub of commerce, actually.
That's the hub of commerce,
yes,
right?
Yes, that's the hub of commerce.
Area
market.
Area market.
I've been in the core of Abia Area market before.
They would jam you if you're
brother.
My brother. Brother.
I think that is supposed to be the silicon. Supposed to be somewhat like the Silicon Valley of Nigeria or the China of Nigeria.
The China of Nigeria.
The China
is
of
more
Nigeria.
Accurate.
Yes.
Because in Aba, especially in that area, there's everybody is into commerce. Everybody is into trade. Everybody is into business. So like there are a myriad of small and medium businesses and micro enterprises
that's feeding the entire nation.
Yeah. And they're producing stuff that you can wear. You know, you go, they make shoes. And you can't even tell the difference between the shoes that they made and the ones that are imported from Italy. And because they're doing so good.
And I've noticed that our government is not really capitalizing on that, Kel, because one thing I believe is capitalize on your strengths.
Mm-hmm.
Don't try building, you know, something is your weak point. You're trying to just create an. What are we doing? Anyways, we'll go into that. I don't want to go into that. I'm just saying that this is an off the cuff conversation.
Yeah,
but
sure.
What I'm just saying in essence is we're strong in commerce. We're seeing what our Igbo brothers and sisters are doing as regards trade, commerce, and all that. But we're not capitalizing on that, just like the Jews did.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
You get?
Mm-hmm.
And that alone can transform an economy. China is so big in trade and commerce than even tech.
Yeah.
I don't know if you get my point.
True.
Yes.
US is big on tech.
Mm-hmm.
But China is big on trade and commerce. Mm. And they are changing their entire economy with that. They became a powerhouse.
Let me interject. If you look at the United States, right, it's a very interesting example, because if you look at the United States, right, you realize that the US has an economy that is so strong because it is so diverse. Its economy.
Mm-hmm.
You go to Michigan, you start seeing auto workers, assembly plants, places where they manufacture, build, and assemble cars.
Mm-hmm.
You go to Texas. They are big on oil extraction and everything, right? You go to where you have SpaceX and NATO and the rest of them.
Mm.
You go to New York, it's the financial markets. You go to Silicon Valley, it's the technology. That's San Francisco, it's technology. You go to LA, you see the entertainment. So you have an economy that is so diverse because the government taps into the different ecosystems that are within the country. You cannot actually become a world power, so to speak, by being just a homogeneous country. Mm-hmm. So you have to be, in order to be self-sufficient, you have to be diverse enough so that you produce a whole lot of things and you have a whole lot of things as well. So Nigeria, yes, we do have oil. Even the oil, we are still debating on how things are. Let me not talk too much so that they will not read this podcast. but at the same time, we have to invest in the commerce sector. We have to invest in the production and the manufacturing. We have massive textile production. What do you call it? Potential down in the Southeast.
In Aba.
So I don't see why if we invest in these things, we don't have the capacity to create super brands that can then sell to Africa, that can then sell to other parts of the world. You understand?
Yeah,
we don't have the labor and the capacity to do that.
I'll say this. I think if you look at US. And sorry for us going here.
No, why not?
If you look at US and the Nigerian ecosystem, you will see, in terms of governance, you see different political structure.
True.
In the US, the state governors play a key part in developing their state according to how they want the state to grow. In Nigeria, I beg to differ.
Yeah.
Because in the US, the government are being compared to pay tax to the federal.
Yeah.
So you grow and you pay your tax to the federal. In Nigeria, they go and collect and do whatever they want to use it for. So when you know that you can always go to the federal government and get a handout, I call it a handout because it's one
It is, actually.
It's a handout. When you go, you don't critically think and say, okay, how do I develop this state in a way that I project what I want the state to be known for? I'm from Imo State. And I used to tell my friends that I don't see any reason why the state capital is in Owerri. And they tell me why. I said, it's a party state.
You're not going to lie, man.
It's the Las Vegas of the country.
Actually.
So why are we not pumping so much money in making it the Las Vegas of this country, then take the government house to where it could do its administrative works and just turn it to a party place? Sport is going on. Gambling is going on. And stuff. People would definitely just want to come there because of that ecosystem. People fly to Lagos today because they know they can make music, they can make themes, they can see good, proper culture. They can... And stuff. Sure. Not, just not to digress for that. But in 2015, you were coding with an outdated skill. You had to go back to a learning institute.
Oh, yeah. They brought me back to it. Okay, so... So I had to now go there. Although, I to be honest with you, I left the school in 2 months. Because, again, my journey getting into tech was a weird one. I left in 2 months. And the reason why I left in 2 months was that I went there then and I realized that even the little I know... Because I went there to go and learn Java. Mm-hmm. Then I realized that the little I know about Java, I'm actually quite ahead of these guys. Like, mm-hmm. I'm ahead of the people that were teaching me. Yeah. Like, I'm not learning anything here. So, I had mm-hmm. to leave. I paid full tuition and then I left after 2 months. Mm-hmm. It's weird. So... But then, you know, the journey continued because after then I decided that I needed to add some more skills to my stack. I mean, I had learned some more languages. I was able to now, you know, build stuff with more modern languages. But then, more importantly, I made a first attempt to put together a team for Pluralcode. Pluralcode is not an idea that started a couple of days ago. Mm. It's actually, I was actually having this idea right as far back as 2016. When mm-hmm. I put together the first initial team, I had like good software engineers. And that was a very interesting point in my life because I was broke. Ooh. I don't have any money. And I brought software engineers. I brought product designers. I brought a number of people, put them together and said, let us work. And for 6 months, the entire team ran on motivational speech from me every single day. There was no money. Literally zero money was paid out. At because I was
later
a student.
They would say they only have, motivational speech.
You know, but it works. It works because I was able to like sell a vision. I was like, okay, guys, let's try and build something that does this, right? If this works out, we are all going to do very well. And we are all going to have a conversation. We are going to have equity in place and we're going to scale this business, you know. But then it's very difficult to listen to that when there's no cash coming in. You understand? So I had to like really, really wake up every day and I'll think, if I was in the position of these guys, what would I tell myself so that I'll be able to go to work today and do everything I have to do?
You'd have done the end bad CEO protest. Because that's what is literally happening. You get, you're motivating people to be calm, be patient.
You know?
But you're not patient. But you know, on the other end, let's not even go into that.
Yeah, so the idea was that, I mean, it didn't... That wasn't the thing that led us to success, but it taught me a lot about leadership and it taught me a lot about learning skills because then I had to like, every other person here is an engineer. So what is it that I can contribute to this team? I don't have to be an engineer as well. Mm-hmm. So at that point, I had to go and learn digital marketing. That was when I learned digital marketing. That was when I started dabbing into learning product design and a couple of other skills. I'm actually a multi-skilled person because of that journey.
A generalist.
You know, yes, generalist because of that journey. Mm-hmm. So because I had to go through all that steps, you know, that just to be functional to the teams that I was creating, you know, I then got to a place, although, of course, obviously, over time, in retrospect, it was obvious, but it wasn't then because I thought it would last forever. But over time, people started losing interest. Because again, you can go, there's only so far you can go without people getting paid.
Sorry, but the idea was an edtech platform from the get-go.
The idea was an edtech platform from the get-go.
Okay.
It has always been, I don't think I had a detour. I think that's the interesting part when we start talking about, oh, bootstrap, how do you get the money? Mm. There was a detour because I'm not an unrealistic person. Mm-hmm. So, you know, the idea has always been an edtech platform. You know, I've always been big into letting people learn skills, allowing mm-hmm. people to, you know, equip themselves because I knew what I passed through in the early days when I didn't have the right guidance. Mm-hmm. You know, wasting 2 years doing mm-hmm. the wrong thing and then having to start afresh again. It's not something that it's not something that people should have to go through. Mm-hmm. You know, so I saw that as a way to solve that problem. I also saw that as a way to you know, an easy way to contribute. Because yeah, we have people have ideas all the time, but how many talents do we, how much talent do we actually have in the market to help execute those ideas? And so if you can put yourself in a place where you can bring the right people, bring people who want to learn, or bring people who are excited and ambitious, and you equip them with the skills, you can actually do a whole lot of phenomenal stuff. And that's the result that we're actually seeing today.
How were you able to maintain excellence? Because my God, man, if you are not paying me, I don't know. Money will more.
My brother. So I had this one interesting challenge one time. That was in 16, yes. 16 was when I came to Lagos the first time. So when I came into Lagos, I was trying to... that was in the early days of building that team. I was trying to like expand on it, trying to meet some people to come and join this startup. Let's do this. Then I was an intern. It is funny thing. When I came into Lagos because I wanted to come and do an internship with the company.
Okay.
Right? I didn't have any money. I wanted to do an internship so I can just get some experience while I'm also still building my business. So now, fast forward to the time I'm in Lagos, I met this one particular guy. I can't forget this guy. I'm not going to mention his name, but I can't forget this guy because I had a meeting with this guy. The whole idea was for him to join the team and help me build this product that we are building. And I told him, look, I don't have any money. I'm not going to lie to you. There's no money on ground right now. But I told him that, okay, you know what? Let's have a second meeting because I want to discuss the whole equity thing and how we can probably bring you in. I said, but you know, for now, let me buy you lunch. The guy, I can't forget this ever. This guy told me, do I look like I'm hungry? It's not lunch I'm looking for. If you cannot pay me, I can't do this.
He's looking for lunch.
You know, imagine spending time talking to somebody, pitching your idea, trying to inspire them so that they can join you, so that you guys can get this thing done for the benefit of everybody. Do I look like I'm hungry? That was like, oh yeah, guy, you have to rethink, because where you are going, you're going to have a lot of problems. You know, you're going to get to a stage where these people that you want to build this thing with, they're going to revolt, because eventually people care about themselves.
Yeah.
You know, if you're not eating, like, what's the motivation? At some point, there's a limit to the motivational speaking.
Yeah.
Eventually, people will ask you, guy, not till they come. Yeah. So, at that point, I had to hit pause. And I'm like, that was when the whole idea of taking the detour started, because at that point, I needed to find a way to make money. So I said, okay, let me use what I already have. I have skills in software engineering, I have skills in digital marketing, I have skills in product designing. Let me look for how to cater to clients, let them pay me to build solutions for them.
Yeah.
And then I take those solutions, and then I take the money that I'm making from those building those solutions and put them together and hopefully get to a place where I can actually afford to hire a team. That was the step. It took a couple of years, but then it was during the pandemic, it was just after the pandemic in 2020 that I now set up a proper team. That was when I started hiring. You know, I remember there's this picture that I have on my phone. I don't know if it's here or maybe on my laptop. Crew Code in 2020 was just two guys. And okay, just me. Sorry, me and two ladies. The first two ladies that I brought onto my team. One is Comfort, one is Bukola. Both of them are in US and Russia now. You know, so me and two ladies that I brought into my team. That was Crew Code in 2020. You know, then in 2021, we hired a few more hands. Today, we are almost 90 people on the team. So that was the whole transition from, you know, having an idea, trying to put together a free team to help you build it together. It didn't really work out. So taking a few years to sit back and go and raise money by doing work. And then now using that to do stepwise developments from there to where we are today.
This is Nigerian dream.
Yes.
Classical example of the Nigerian dream.
You know?
As in, your shoulder power should be high every time. Before, when we hear this success story, we feel it's abracadabra.
But
he just walked us through the process of starting from a two-man team to having 90 stars right now.
It's really plural, it's insane, actually.
If anybody tells you nothing works in Nigeria, this should be like, watch this video. It did work. Now, Plural Code, how many students so far?
Okay, so we've, over the last 3.5 years, we've trained more than 6,000 people. I think by the end of this year, we should be breaching 7,000. So before, when we started, we used to do more high volume training. Like, we have a lot of students, but then I started, that was now me trying to realize, me starting to realize that the best way to go about talent development is not by packing a crowd of people and teaching them. That's one of the reasons why we had a lot of numbers in the early days. Mm. So it's not a packing a crowd of people and then teaching them and then sending them out. Is not the width, it's the depth. So at that point, we realized that the market is so competitive that if you only do the barest minimum, you churn out a bunch of people who are just going to be at the lowest level of the pyramid. So you have to get people to the highest point. How do you get them to the highest point? By going deep into the trainings, not by just doing maybe a 1 month, 3 weeks, something, and sending them crash course. No. Crash course can give people foundation, but foundation is not the only thing that you need for success. You need a whole lot of things stacked on top of it. So we decided to move away from the idea of crowd and start. Now we have cohorts of maybe 30, 40 people, 20 people. Like, I'm talking about in each course. So in a general cohort across all the courses, you may have like 200 as opposed to like 1,000 before. So, right, we had to step down on that and we focus more on doing, we have 5 months programs now. After the 5 months programs, you have a career development for like a month, and then you go for internships. We actually like place you for internships where you now get to, we've partnered with more than 30 companies so that as you are graduating, we are placing you somewhere. You go there, you work, you get experience. Some of these guys is like paid internships as well. So you get paid, you get experience. You see what it's like to do this in the real world. You get mentored, you get the career opportunity and everything. So it became more of a mission to do the right thing rather than just to do numbers. You understand? And that actually even helped us reputation wise and everything.
Frank is not a believer of the EdTech system.
So you might think I'm not a believer of the EdTech system, but it's because of, you talked about it right now, and it was because of the way it was done in the past. The modus operandi in the EdTech system was volume. You get it, was just volume. And when in any market, once you're just dealing with volume, it is hardly ever bespoke.
True.
You get. True. If you want to get the finest dining, let's use the US for instance. You can go to McDonald's. You want to get the finest of dining in Nigeria, you can get it from Chicken Republic. Right.
Yeah. Everybody will come after you.
No. The finest of fine dining.
Yeah,
you want to get fine dining. You want 4-course meal. You want. They've told you that this is, you're driving off. You're hungry. That's their business model. You come in. You get what you want.
Yeah.
Your belly full small. Or your move. You can't complain that, oh, you didn't give me some ice cream. You didn't give me starter. You didn't give me.
Where's the red wine?
Red wine.
For Chicken Republic.
I don't know, you get my point.
I get you.
So that was the problem. Yeah. And that alone would only take you thus far. It won't take you really far.
Yeah.
Like, it's just a thing for, oh, I just finished the course. That was what it was before. It was a thing for light camera action.
Yeah, validation.
But now, people, just like what you said, you decided to put in the work to go deep.
Yeah.
People were just getting these courses. They weren't placed on internship. They weren't facing, they were not facing real life obstacles.
Yes.
You get in building those solutions.
Yeah.
They just had in-head knowledge, and that was what we did in school. And that's why I've been talking about this. We're having a conversation the other time, and I said that, what is really happening? Why are we not taking the model from China and Japan with what they are doing with their kids? Putting this curriculum into, putting these skills into the curriculum of preschool.
So
students,
so
right from early age. Mm. And that's how you build a very solid individual who is skilled, who has a particular skill set, not just somebody who has the certification. In my university days, I had somebody who every week he gets one certification or the other. If he's not getting from LinkedIn Learning, he's getting from Coursera. He's getting from what's the name of that lady? Linda. Is it Linda?
Linda has been bought by LinkedIn Learning now.
Yeah. Yes, Linda. Or some of all these things. They're just getting certification, but it's good. What happens to the certification? Now, who's certification? Get my point. So you need to make sure you understand this thing. It's not a function. You cannot learn how to drive by reading.
Okay.
It is not possible.
So
you can't learn how to cook by reading. You learn how to cook by cooking. By you learn how to drive by driving.
He is right.
Yes, that's what I was not a fan of. of edutech because of the way the model, and people, they were raising funds. But how many people from those edutech structures were building startups?
Yeah.
How many of them were really developing softwares? We had these companies bringing in software engineers to this country to do basic stuff, to debug. And that's why I was like, no, I'm done with all these edutech.
I've had a lot of people that think this. I'll be happy to actually weigh in on it.
Why not?
But go ahead.
No, where you finish? Okay, I have a question that I want to chip in.
Yeah, because I do get where he's coming from. Now, the truth is this. At some point in your journey as an entrepreneur, you have to face the truth. Mm. You understand? And if you are doing something where everybody is telling you, yeah, you are great, look at yourself closely. Something is about to go wrong. I'm maybe a little bit paranoid, but that's the way I look at life. You know, if once in a while you're not getting people, and once in a while you yourself, you're not putting yourself in check and say, are you really sure that you are as good as they say? Can I be better? If you're not doing that for yourself and for your business and for your industry, you're just wasting your time. And that's my belief as a person. Now, I totally understand where you're coming from. So the market, the funny thing about any business, it is just the same way that back when we were kids, if you go and buy Speedy biscuits back then, I don't know if any of you had Speedy. You know, Speedy was a lot bigger then, you know, much more volume. Even cheese balls, there's a lot more volume, right? But then over time, the company starts to scale and then they start to reduce the quality, they start to reduce the volume. Why? So that they can make more profits. And so
they're filling it with air.
Exactly. So you buy bags of air and then the company goes to the bank. So the issue that
they actually call that is sachetization or something.
Yeah, shrinkflation.
Shrinkflation.
So that is just a fancy language way of saying that we filled it with air. Now, let's bring it back to the industry that we are talking about. A lot of the times you realize that it takes a lot of effort to take somebody from a novice to even an intermediate. It takes a lot of effort, a lot of training. We face this all the time. Sometimes you are teaching students, you have to teach, you have to talk over and over, you have to set examples, you have to do projects, you have to do this, you have to do that. And what happens is that because of the fact that it takes a lot of effort, it's easy to fall for the temptation of saying, you know what, I don't even give a damn if they actually got the result or not. Let me just, you know, finish with them, send them away, get the next set of people. So that the money can keep flowing, so that the cash flow can keep coming. It's easy to fall for that. It's easy to fall for that temptation. You are running a business after, you have to feed people. You know, I have payroll. I've told you the number of people I have on my team. I have a payroll. At the end of every month, you look at the payroll and you're like, bro, are you sure? You know, so when you have all those expenses, you know you have to make money. You have to have turnovers. You have people coming in so that you can make money. Right. So, but now, if you are now saying, okay, at the end of the day, maybe if you bring out the maybe 5,000 people, 10,000 people, how many of them are actually doing anything important? How many of them actually have enough right now to be significant? You know, so the number is very low usually. And so that's why I understand where you're coming from. And that's why I also empathize with the people who have done it in the past, because it's not like they want to be wicked, but you have a business to run. And so it's very difficult when you want to balance making money from people versus providing high quality. Why? Because sometimes in stacking those value on the things that you want to provide, you can price yourself out of the market. You know, and we face that issue. We face that issue so many times. You will say, okay, let's add this so that the people that are learning can get this benefit, they'll get that. All those things you're adding, you're paying for something.
Yeah, very true.
If you are doing internship, if you're offering this, we went to go and get accreditations in three different institutions in US, Canada, and Europe. We spent a lot of money, a lot of rigorous processes so that our students can be able to get access to an internationally recognized diploma and certificate.
Yeah.
A lot goes into that. So when you're doing all those things and you're not saying, okay, how do I factor these costs into the tuition? Mm-hmm. You run the risk of pricing yourself out of the market. And then your competitors are much cheaper than you are. And then you now start having to explain to the people, like, just come and join and learn and all these things.
Well, I'll ask a question.
All right.
The 3MTT by the Ministry for Communication and Digital Innovation. Is it a competitor for you guys?
He was once the founder of CC Hub.
Yeah, I know. He's actually a very brilliant guy. He has done a lot in the industry.
Yeah,
you know,
yeah.
Is he a competitor? I'll ask the question again, then I'll make my examples.
Okay.
The 3MTT launched by 3MTT, for those listening that don't know, is the 3 million
tech talent.
Mm. It's being done to produce 3 million tech talents by the end of the administration, right? And they have done classes, cohort, even giving out laptops.
Yeah.
And I was having a conversation with a friend. He owns one of the big IT firms in Lagos. Yeah. And he said, why is the ministry handling that project themselves? Why is that money not given to accelerators like yours?
Mm.
You said you have produced 6,000 students.
Yeah.
If he has 100 accelerators like you functioning at a high pace rate every year,
yeah,
putting out 5,000 candidates, tech talent every year to the job market, and you guys are also in charge of sourcing for the job for them, in a year he has 100, he has gotten 5 million, if my math is correct.
Mm.
He has gotten 5 million. So why is the ministry not taking it upon themselves to do the job? Number one, they could say, okay, can we get 2020 accelerators from all geopolitical zone and make them the lead accelerators? Can we have a subsidized fee from you guys? Then can we pay 60%, 40% upfront? And can you guys also be in charge of the laptop?
Mm.
That's my issue with Nigerian government, because they have this their policy in hush-hush.
Yeah.
Those are things you do YouTube content creation from behind the scene.
Yeah.
So, discussing with you guys.
So I think that...
Before you answer that, I was even going to say, remember what happened during the protest? There was something that happened that they destroyed one of the facilities for this ministry
in
Kano.
Yeah.
That same place, they went into a library and they destroyed and looted a lot of things. And guess what? They didn't take a single book. So people are not interested in learning, actually. That's a very big pain point. I don't know if it's your sector, so you tell us about that. People are necessarily not interested in learning.
Mm-hmm.
People just want the easy way out. They don't want to put in the work. And so if you're coming from top, if you're coming from the grassroots rather, it's always very difficult.
Mm-hmm.
I'm telling you.
Mm.
So if you're doing a volumes thing, and that's what you're saying, the partnership with accelerators, if you're doing a volumes thing, yes, we want to get in all the numbers, train a lot of people, but you are not interested in volume. You are interested in going deep, drilling, becoming
the
burner boy of your industry.
So I like this conversation. Now, so let me premise by saying that actually I think the 3MTT initiative is partnering with a number of tech schools. However, I will explain why there is nuance. It's not just black and white.
Yeah.
So when they launched, we actually applied as well. I think we applied, we got an email back. I probably didn't follow up the way I was supposed to follow up because I was so busy now. But we also got another notification from them later on when they were trying to place some people. They wanted to know if they can place some of them to come work at our organization. I'm like, bruv, I already have so many people. Who told you I want more? So, but regardless, that's just the surface of it. Now, it's 100% true that if the government or the ministry wants to do this exceptionally well, they have to, first of all, the commitment of that 3 million, I think that was a lot. I think that that's a lot because it already exposes you. In fact, it traps you into doing the volume game rather than doing the quality game. You don't need 3 million software engineers to change the country. What you need is a good number of very high talented people who can access opportunities and who can then turn around and create opportunities for others as well. So what you want to do is to create a ripple effect. You equip people, you equip accelerators that can provide high value talents. They provide high value talents. Those high value talents can then be gainfully employed or gainfully deployed in working in projects. So you have to, if you're going to, I look at this like this, if you're going to create an ecosystem, if you want to create a successful ecosystem, talents, startups, ecosystem builders and investors, you have to connect all four of these elements. You understand? It can't just be one side. can't just be talents, because then if you churn out all these talents and they have no place to work, then what's the point? So you have to find a way to like connect the dots, in the sense that you have high quality people who are coming in, you have you provide access to funding and advisory for the people who are coming out as startup founders, who can then hire these talents, you know, and then turn these talents into creators. You support the edtech industry and the talent development agencies, so that they themselves can have more capacity to be able to not just develop more talent, but mentoring as well. Then you make the economy attractive to investors who can then come in and fund this whole thing. You know, so if you connect the dots like that, it will grow organically. Because just going in and churning out 3 million talents and throwing them into the pool, you know, and especially because you are already doing the volume game. And unfortunately, to say, like, I love my industry, but unfortunately, when you're already playing the volume game, you're not going to go very far. They will tick the box, we've hit 3 million. They will tick the box, we've hit 3 million. They will do the PR events and everything. But at the end of the day, that it doesn't move the needle. And that's one of the reasons why when I started, when the whole thing started, I set up a small team within my company. I led that team to do a proper analysis, let's say competitive analysis. It would be back to the question that you asked about, are they a competitor? So I looked at it as they could also be collaborators. It's a little bit nuanced. It's not like black and white again. So but I viewed them from that scope, and I saw that no, not really, because we don't have the same objectives. They have an objective based on volume. We have an objective based on depth. And how can we? So because of that, we can just stack a lot of value on what we do and actually produce high quality talent. You understand? So I don't lose any sleep because of 3MTT. I love them. I love the initiative. I don't lose any sleep as a result of that.
Okay, guys, we're going to take a quick break. And when we come back, definitely, you know how we're doing it here. We're going to continue with the Frankly Business Podcast. Cheers. Welcome back, guys. So you we've been talking about 3MTT, but then let's come into reality, and let's talk about somebody who is perhaps just watching in the streets of Lagos, one dead end, or perhaps in Aba where you started from. And this person is like, we're done with oil. I'm about to enter school. You know how we're all thinking of, oh, I want to do petroleum engineering because we found oil in 1970. Yes, we want to work with Shell, Chevron. But now, this is our Shell and Chevron.
My brother.
But so Nigerians, a few Nigerians are like, okay, I want to come into this tech ecosystem. There's a truckload of money here.
Yeah.
There are lots of opportunities here. What is your advice for such person? And I want us to break it down. From coding, from no code skills, what is the lowest hanging fruit as you get skill acquisition? What skills do you feel is going to be the skill of the future? Before we now go into AI, let's really talk.
Okay, so I like that question.
Yeah.
And the reason why I like that question is because it is a question that we get all the time. I think I was having a conversation with somebody and I mentioned that every single day at Plurico, we get between 300 to 400 people who reach out to us to make inquiries about what skill do I learn, how do I start, you know, I have this background, maybe I studied biology, you know, whatever it is, and can I even learn cybersecurity because I studied biology? It's like, so we have to answer these questions every time. And one of the things I always say right from time is this. I try to give everybody that belief that, number one, yes, the answer is yes. Tech, as we have it today, is an industry that is driven by competence and skill, not by certification. Certification is important to open some doors, but primarily what keeps those doors open is competence and skill. So, and your competence and skill has nothing to do with what you studied in school. Some things can help you. For example, I studied mathematics.
Oh wow!
Because I studied mathematics.
Same here.
Yeah. Oh, awesome! So because I studied mathematics, don't ask me what it is. Because I studied mathematics.
Yeah.
It helps me a lot in logical reasoning, because there was a lot of challenges that you had to solve every single day of your life. You were like a mad person. But that aside, it doesn't really affect your competence. Why? Because your competence and your skill is determined by how much time you've dedicated into learning and practice, and how much time you've dedicated into actually using that in the real world. to do something productive. And so what I usually tell people is this: look, if you want to be a good person in tech, you have to, number one, start by understanding that this is very possible for you to do. A lot of people come with so much doubt. You know, I don't know if my head can carry it. You wouldn't believe how many times I hear this all the time. But you have to, first of all, come in with some level of belief that, okay, I'm going to give this my all. And this is the career that I want to choose. And I want to make sure that in the next 2 years, 3 years, I'm going to be extremely successful at doing this thing. And then once you've been able to psych yourself, you know, and get ready to actually do this, then yeah, it's now okay, what skills are there for you to learn? Not everybody wants to learn how to write code. You know, some people do, but not everybody wants to learn how to write code, right? So that's why the no code skills are, you know, trending today. They're more popular today than anything. So you have to now decide, okay, what kind of skill suits best with where I want to go with my career and suits best with who I am as a person. So some people are the more creative types who want to like explore stuff like product design or graphics design or animations or whatever it is. So it's a visual world, very easy to jump into. In 2-3 months, you can get the fundamentals all locked in and you can start practicing, you know. So these are skills that that requires you to, you know, use your sense of color, space, timing and everything to make sense. I like to say that the product designers are like the architects of the digital world. You know, just like architects drop the building plans and everything that goes up there, the product designers, there is their responsibility to design the experience that later becomes the mobile app, the software and whatever it is. You know, then there are people who want to go into the data space. Maybe some people who like to look, spot patterns and make decisions. You know, data, one of the skills that is very prominent there is you can either be a data analyst, you can be a business analyst. A data analyst, there's a lot of different ways you can apply, but a data analyst uses data collected, uses that to establish trends, and then uses those trends to make strategic decisions. So any business that wants to go very far, you need to have a data analyst in your team. And the reason why that is important is this: you are trying to outcompete everybody else. You're trying to make more money than them. You're trying to be more favored in the marketplace than them. You're not just going to do that by luck. You're going to do that by understanding deeply where the trends are leaning, so that you can jump in on things before even the competitors figure it out, you know, so that you can cash out before even the competitors understand what. So there are always people who are leading, and then there are always people who come in after the leaders have made the money and left. They'll come in and pick the pieces. You understand? We've always had this in the industry. So having a data analyst in your team, a very good one, can actually look into your numbers, look into your sales and find, okay, what are the regions that I should be targeting in my marketing? What kind of messaging should I use in my marketing? How should I price my products very well? How should I establish myself very well in the space so that, you know, if I do this and do this and do this, people are going to like me more, sales will increase, business will increase, efficiency will increase, things like that. So that helps a lot. You also have people who are more on the management and leadership style, and I would say go for product management. As a product manager, you can actually put together a team of software engineers, designers, data analysts and everything who want to come to the final point of building a product that people are going to use, and it is your job to galvanize that team to create the systems and processes and tools that they are going to use to make their work as effective as possible, leading to the production of a product that users are going to like. So from understanding your market to putting together the team to creating the best possible systems and processes for them to work, to testing and delivery, to understanding how to take your product to market, a product manager helps you with all of that. You understand? So there are a lot of other skills. But for anybody who wants to go into no-code tech skills, I would say that these are the areas you want to take a look at. And these guys are highly paid in the market today, because they are very high in demand and all that. Yeah.
What's the minimum salary?
Well, it depends. Minimum salary in which market?
Okay. I love that. I love that. So you're going to... We'll have two. One for the global market and one for our domestic market, the Nigerian market.
And just to add to it, how do you assess global opportunities?
It's very interesting. Okay, so the minimum salary thing, I don't...
Or average.
Let's say average.
If you don't want to do minimum.
Yeah, let's say average, because minimum is tricky. People can do anything if they are hungry. They'll accept 50K if they are hungry. You know. So, you know, an average, you can see a very good products manager can earn 300, 400K a month. Like on average, maybe 2 years experience, 3 years experience. From 5 years experience, you should start earning more than close to a million actually. If you're very, very, very super good at what you're doing. Some people earn more than that. You know, same with software engineers here in Nigeria. If you go outside, you start to, there's a lot more upside potential if you go outside. I have friends who make as much as $3,000 a month, you know, as product managers, as customer success, whatever. They make thousands of dollars a month because they work remotely for foreign companies. You understand? So it depends on where you want to target. There are a lot of opportunities within that range of earnings.
How do I assess global opportunities? I have this skill and I want to work for international firms. I don't want to earn in there. How do I assess global opportunities? And with AI coming into play in the game, making tech teams a lot smaller, how do I stay future proof?
I was at an event in Rwanda earlier this year, and I was in a panel and I was asked that question. That question stopped me dead in my tracks. I had to like think for like 10 seconds before I started talking. You know, the truth is this, the threat of AI, I wouldn't call it, the opportunity that we have with AI is a very interesting one. It's a threat in some sense, but it's also a massive opportunity.
Mm-hmm.
But the one thing I like to look at it this way, there is nothing that AI is going to do today that will make humans irrelevant in the workplace. Why? Because there are different dynamics for work. You know, there is certain types of work that requires analytical thinking. There's certain types of work that requires empathy. There's certain types of work that requires, you know, to connect to your soul. There are different things that humans can do that you can't really use algorithms to replicate.
Mm-hmm.
You know, now what I would say is this: for anybody who wants to access a global opportunity, especially with the advent of AI, the first thing you need to do is to become excellent at what you do. If you're a software engineer, you need to be one of the best at what you do. There's a thought process I'm going to, I'll get to the AI soon.
Okay.
Because first of all, right now I'm talking about the humans.
Okay.
Right. So first of all, if you want to, you have to be extremely competent at what you do to become a global level talent. Because the market, you have millions of people in this space. You're not just competing with the guy across the street who doesn't know how to drag and drop or center a div. You are competing with people who have been doing this for ages. And so you have to be exceptionally well at what you do. You know, the laying of the foundation continuously and the upskilling yourself continuously is very important, undeniably. Now, let's move to the AI factor of it. Now, the problem with the AI factor of it is that we are afraid of AI. We are thinking of AI as this thing that is going to come in and make humans, you know, completely irrelevant. No, but the truth is this, the AI itself, until AI becomes Skynet, it will still require humans to train. To still require humans to feed data into it so that you can make better decisions, to still require humans to refine it, to still require humans to compare it to, and to still require, you know, humans to manage the entire process, but the ethical process, the governance process, and everything that has to do with that AI. We can't just let AI run on its own. You understand? Because then Skynet, Terminator. You understand? So yeah. It will still require humans to provide some kind of guidelines and guardrails. And even in the business sector, it will still require humans to actually provide the information that AI now uses to make better decisions. We create, even in the data science space, you create artificial intelligence models, you create machine learning models. Those can be constituted as AI. Those are AI actually, right? You build models that you feed data into and it makes better decisions. It learns, it becomes better and better and better. Somebody still has to know the right type of data to fit into it.
Mm-hmm.
So the truth is this, in the advent of AI is going to take some jobs away. Don't get me wrong. But there will always be new types of jobs. We used to have people that in the late 1800s, before the automobile became a thing, we used to have people whose job was to mold the shoe for the horses. There are people whose job was to create carriages for the people who used to move around. And sure. Then the automobile came in. Those people metamorphosed into the mechanics. Maybe not the same set of people, but you can see how that skill is translatable.
Mm-hmm.
It became the mechanics, the people who can fix automobiles, maintain it and everything. So there is always the room for adaptation.
Not the ones in Nigeria.
But so there's always going to be the room for adaptation. That's why I don't lose sleep over AI, because I believe that eventually this same thing that is taking away jobs will create new jobs. Every single solution that a man has ever created has led to another set of problems that required another set of people to come in and create and provide even higher value. Every single thing that you can think of. You know, the internet came in, we needed software engineers, we needed designers, right?
Yeah.
When the internet was not there, we needed people to do the telephone lines. Now that we have smartphones, we need people to manufacture the screens, we need people to manufacture the software,
the chips.
So, the chips and everything. So every single thing that comes will bring its own set of opportunities.
Are we ready in this part of the world?
No.
Is Africa ready?
No.
How can we get ready?
There is no short-term answer to that. AI will come, we will suffer for a while because of AI. And here's what it means, because we are just not ready for it yet. And because we are just not ready for it yet, those people, those world economies that are already leading us will extend their lead by like times 20 before we start catching up. Because they already have it.
Yeah.
So their workflow will become more efficient. They'll be able to come up with more profitable ways to do business. They'll be able to come up with more profitable ways to get around whatever restrictions exist between you and them. They will be able to 20x their economy before we even know what is going on.
The Minister of Digital Economy is watching right now. What advice will you give to him in terms of making sure we close the gap?
There is no advice that I can give right now that will automatically... The best thing I can do is to say shorten the time frame between now and when we catch up. And the only way to shorten that time frame is to invest in setting up knowledge systems and knowledge institutions that will start to teach people on how AI works and how to actually monetize AI. I'm not just setting that up. What I am a big fan of public-private partnerships is to incentivize the institutions that exist right now to then go out and bring in the right experts in AI, bring in the right people who can actually train and teach and use these stuff so that we can start now to get accustomed to all these systems. Because if you don't do it now, by the time we actually get around to it, it's over.
Okay, so I on the final note, I would love to find out, if you see what is happening in your ecosystem, there are lots of issues, people raising funds, people, you see founders getting money, raising funds, shutting down. I said it earlier this year, there was a report that came out and seven startups in Nigeria, actually raised the cumulative sum of $70 million.
Mm-hmm.
And they all folded up. Co-founders conflict, either misappropriation of funds, lack of good governance, whatever the case may be, but they just ended up going down the drain. What is really happening? What is happening with your ecosystem? It looks like people are just building to raise, not building to really solve the problem or perhaps scale the solution of the problems they are solving.
So this is a culture that we borrowed from late-stage Silicon Valley.
Hmm.
And unfortunately, we now have people who are building products for investors, not products for customers. It's very interesting. I like to look at it this way. When I say that, here's what I mean. When you build a product to solve a problem for a customer, you know what you're building. And you spend a lot of time on the whole competence side of it so that you can build some. Because you know that if you build a product that a customer does not like, you're in trouble. If you can't figure out a way to build something that sells and people like, oh, you're going to go bankrupt. Now we have people who are building products for investors. And those products, what I mean by those products is the startups. People come up with an idea because they think that people come up with an idea, start building a particular thing because they think that investors will fund it, not because they think that users need it.
Mm.
That's why we are now in a place where we have hundreds of fintech companies all doing the same thing. Why? We have hundreds of people. Everybody will come in. Yes, the new way to pay and send funds. I have that. I have like 10 different fintech and banking apps on my phone. I've got like dozens of whatever, wallets, whatever. I've got all of them. I don't need another one. I don't need app number 15. Right? But because they see that this is a product that investors are happy to invest in. So that's why I said they are building a product for them. They're building those startups as products for investors, not products for customers. And so if we are to roll that back and get back to doing the right things, we have to go back to the fundamentals and understand that. And that's also one of the reasons why I always advise, look, if you're going to build a company, do it for the right reasons, number one, and make sure that even if you want to go and raise funds, or unless you are in an exceptional situation where the solution requires so much money to build, try to go lean for a period of time before you raise funds. That will help to center you so that you can do the right thing, because that will put you in a position where you have to build something that sells to the customer so that the customers will pay you. Those are your best investors because they come with zero equity. you know. But people are just building, and then they go and show investors. Investors give them money, and then they, what they do is that once they get the money, runway goes times 50. They hire things that they don't need. They start doing unnecessary.
They move to Ikoyi.
You know, they move to
Ikoyi.
It's insane, right? So they go and do all these things, and then a year later, they come and do a podcast like this and tell us how they failed because the market conditions were not good. But that's not true. My brother, you failed. You did not fail, actually, because you intended to fail. If you intended to fold up, you succeeded. You did not fail.
Yeah.
So, because you've done what you wanted to be, you've cashed out, you know. And in some cases, yeah, I understand that in some cases, business conditions, market conditions, whatever. But majority of the people who are going into this thing, maybe I'm paranoid, but I don't trust them very much.
Okay.
Because they're just doing it to make money.
Okay. Final segment we have. Who would you love for us to bring on next? On the podcast,
the people I like, you've already brought them
and have questions. And no, funny enough, we have a culture where you ask them the question,
okay,
and who you would love to bring, who you would love us to interview on the podcast.
Interesting,
and drop a question for him or her.
The person I would have mentioned initially, immediately, I think you had him on VOPT very recently,
okay,
Franklin Peters.
Okay, wow.
He's my guy,
okay,
he's a big friend of mine,
yeah.
But let's see if you can bring in. I don't know if you can bring in Tijani. I don't know how busy he's getting.
Okay, Boston Tijani.
Boston Tijani.
What question?
If you bring in Boston Tijani, one of the things I'd like to ask him is this. I want to understand what the long-term plan for the development of Nigeria's digital economy is beyond 3MTT, beyond the robotics program and everything. Because, again, I keep saying it is not enough to just churn out a volume of talent. How are we planning to connect the dots between talent, startup, ecosystem builders, and investors? Because that is the only thing that will allow us to have an organically growing economy. So, and I would really love to have an answer for that, because I actually do like the guy. I respect him a lot and his work massively. I just want to make sure that at the end of the day, his intentions for the digital economy in Nigeria is seen to pass. You know, so.
Boston Tijani, you've heard from Nduka Okpabe, who has said it, the founder of Plural Code, that he wants to make sure you succeed beyond just ticking a few boxes, but making sure whatever it is you're doing in that particular ministry of digital innovation and communication, sees the light of the day. Whatever it is you're doing is gaining relevance and creating a lot of impact in the Nigerian economy at large. Ladies and gentlemen, this is where we call it a wrap on the Frankly Business Podcast. Kelechi, tell your people something.
Like, subscribe, and share. The bigger the channel go, the bigger the guests we have and we can bring on board. And it's been, I keep saying this, I will keep reinforcing it, that you are a classic example of the Nigerian dream, that it's possible in this climate from 2 to 90. From 2015 to date, you deserve your flowers. And and I hope anybody there building, trying to do something, don't give up. You have seen a classic example. That's what the podcast is for.
Yeah.
And the opportunities are there. Go make something out of yourself.
Awesome. Plural Code.
Awesome stuff.
You might tell them where should they meet you across all social media platforms.
Yeah, well, you can go to @pluralcode_academy. That's on IG. You can go to pluralcode.institute. That's the website. You can visit our office at Fobitoyin Street, Ikeja. We just recently announced the center in Victoria Island and another one for trainees in Abuja as well. So we did all this in a couple of months, you know, ago. So yeah, we can't wait to see you. Join us, join thousands of people and make something out of yourself in this ecosystem. And I'll be happy to talk to you at any time.
Cheers, guys. You've heard it. Next episode, like, share, subscribe. And that's it.